Title belts to Hall of Fame. Doug and Tommy carved the name. Fists of fury and hearts of gold. Every story, every fight we told. Tales of glory, laughter, cry. Tennessee warriors with hearts open wide. Conversations, fans wanting more. Podcast kings ruling the way. Memphis wrestling raising the stage.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Dangerous Conversations with Dangerous Doug Gilbert and Tommy Wildfire Rich. Tommy, welcome back, man.
Hey, man, it's good to be back. I bet y'all missed the hell out of me last week. It's quiet as I
am.
Hey, God, it's good to be back.
Oh, shoot, yeah. We for sure missed you. I sit down, Tommy. I know you told me you was kind of celebrating the 4th a little late this year, and you was eating some good food earlier. I just sat down and listened, cooked some squash and fried some squash, and I had some peppers. One of my neighbors brought me some peppers over here and some corn. And everything, I sit down, I beat me a good meal earlier too, and man, it was good.
Like garden fresh stuff too now. I'm never talking about. I'm talking,
right.
Talking to Peg, my mom, the other day, and Steve's son, he planted a big old garden. He's been bringing, she loves tomatoes. And, so he's been bringing a bunch of tomatoes, man, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, because you were out on actual 4th of July, you were out wrestling and handling business. So you had to celebrate a little late, right?
Yes, we had what a heck of a crowd turned out, man. It was about 500 people, I think. What a real good day too, though, man. Just so you know, there in Kentucky up in them hills, man, it's great wrestling fans. And want to thank Mayor there and Will Wright and just everybody that helped put that together, man. It was sure a pleasure, man.
Yeah, I saw some pictures, man. I seen it was a great crowd up there and saw some video of the fireworks and everything. And yeah, that was an awesome deal. Hey, how high's your volume, Doug? Because I'm getting some echo a little bit.
About there.
Say something, Tommy.
My good. I turned mine down a little bit.
There we go. Perfect.
No. Hey, hold on a second. He was talking low. That's probably what it was.
All right. We're sounding good now. All right. All right. So pick back up here. All right. So guys, you know, we got dangerous conversations going on here each week, but you guys are doing some dangerous conversations on the radio as well. Tell us a little bit about what you got going on there.
Oh yeah, man. It's really cool. I mean, we're doing radio here in Jackson, Tennessee, and it's being streamed across. Now, Tommy's a lot better than this at this than I am. It's streamed across, I think, Apple. What all is it, Tommy? Apple?
Roku. It's Roku. And it Fire Stick, too?
Yeah, Fire Stick.
Roku, Apple, WMS. And I don't know. It might be one more.
Yes. Talking West Tennessee, WN, what'd you say, TS, Tommy? WN?
WNMS, ain't it?
Yeah, it's Talking West Tennessee. But, I mean, you pull it up. It's pretty simple to pull up, I think. But, yeah, it's being streamed, Gene. It's cool. We've got a guy that I've known for years. He's helping us get it all together and everything. And I think it's going to be a good thing, which we talk about different just topics, kind of like we do on here. But we'll get a match or two, and we'll show it. Me and Tommy have talked to people through it and everything, and it's been really good so far.
Cool. Good stuff. Yeah, if you guys want to find a link to that, it's there on the Facebook page, and we'll also have a link to it over on DougGilbertPodcast.com. So you can go to either one of those two places and click a link, and then you'll be right there and check out what the guys are doing over there. But today, we're going to talk about masked wrestlers. Somebody sent me a list of some of the top masked wrestlers in the United States from the 1940s to the 1990s. And it's a pretty interesting list here. And, you know, if you're not a wrestling fan, some people may find it kind of hard to wrap their head around the idea of somebody wearing a mask. You know, and I know you guys were both fans of wrestling before you got in it. Did you like masked wrestlers? Did you think they were cool before you got in the business?
You're fixing to laugh, but I did. I really like masked wrestlers, and by the time I started, I guess a little of the mystique and a lot. I think a lot of guys didn't want to be masked wrestlers. They wanted to show their own face and everything. But I mean, I remember when I was a kid and stuff, and this goes back probably before Tommy started. Remember, like, to me, I mean, there's a lot of different guys and some really cool ones, but like you just go back and you think of the like a couple of them that just stood out. It was like, you know, you'd always say, and for up 10 years, we've said the Assassins, who, you know, yeah. Whichever Assassins tag team it was, whether it be at the start and be Jody Hamilton and somebody, or Jody Hamilton, Tom Ernesto, or Jody Hamilton. And I think there was many different ones with him, but I always thought it was real cool, all the different tag teams and single guys.
Hey, and a lot of come through Tennessee too. I mean, Dr. Ken Rainey and the interns, man.
The interns.
Like when I first started, used to watch them wrestle some, but then when I started, I got to wrestle them. I mean, they had a bunch of the Mighty Yankees, I think, were here.
Yeah.
Quite a few. Well, not necessarily masked, but great tag teams come through, but I mean, just them off the top of my head, man, were, you know.
Hey, Gene, what was the name? Tommy laughed at me the other night. I said this, when Jerry Lawler was under mask with Don Green, what was their, what did the blue something, or what was they called?
Gosh. Were they the Blue Demons?
Or the, it wasn't Demons. No. It was Blue and
Inferno? Blue Infernos?
Well,
the Blue Love Boys.
it might have been Inferno, Gene. It was something like that, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I'll have to do some studying on that. That one's a little for my time. But yeah, I remember as a kid, like anytime they would do the tease during the match, especially like if it was a heel mask guy, the baby face would start trying to untie the mask. I'd get all excited, like, oh my God, we're going to find out who he is, which is usually was just a tease and it wasn't going anywhere. But I fell for it every time. I'd lean against the front of the team, like, oh God, we're going to find out who this is, you know? And of course, you and your friends have all these theories on who it could be under the mask and everything. So I don't know. I always thought that was a really fun element that you don't see much anymore other than like the luchadors. But I mean, who the hell knows who any of those guys are anyway? So,
and you know, the funny thing about Gene, you said that and that's exactly right. And that's what everybody's going for, doing that and everything. But I will never forget when it was 87, 88, somewhere through there when Jimmy Valiant was doing the Boogeyman tour. Remember when they brought him, they shot the angle in Charlotte, but they brought him. And who was the mascot? Was it Assassin or somebody who he worked
with? Yeah, he was feuding with the Assassin.
But they brought it up here to Memphis. You know, they just showed it on Memphis TV and everything. They called it the Boogie Jam tour. They showed him shaving his beard or something, and they brought it up here. And then they had a match where if he beat him, he'd unmask him or whatever. And he beat him and he unmasked him. But the only problem was, didn't nobody have no clue to who he was. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
It's cool to unmask somebody, but it kind of helps if there's some kind of story, which, I mean, the story was the shaving his, and also the story was it drew money. Just showing that on TV, and it freaking drew money, and the people was into it. But the only thing about unmasking him was, didn't nobody know who he was. and who was it, Gene? It was me and you talked about this before. Which I said
the one that was wrestling Jimmy Valiant, the Assassin there?
I said
said it was Darso, and I was thinking it was Hercules. But they both did it in that same time period, so it really could have been either one. But I'm guessing Hercules would have been more recognizable at that point. Darso wouldn't have, nobody really would have really recognized, especially not in Memphis and Charlotte and everything, because he hadn't had the run as a Russian yet. So nobody would have really known who he was. So more than likely, you're right. I'm guessing.
Hey, that's Darso. Not one of them Russians Tommy keeps wrestling, is it?
They got to be related somewhere along the way.
Could be. Hey, but seriously, on a serious note, you know why all them old timers wore them masks? Because most of them guys' pictures was hanging up at the post office.
That makes sense. They,
for real outlaws.
Yeah, those jokes. Yeah.
And there's something to be said. You guys have talked about on here how, like, you know, you guys would go and do something dastardly at the Coliseum to Lawler or Jeff Jarrett or somebody, and then, you know, you got a mob waiting for you down the road trying to catch y'all at a gas station or something. But if you're under a mask and you slip out that back door and then the mask comes off, you can go wherever you want. Nobody knows you're the guy that was just in the ring a minute ago doing that. Is that one of the big advantages?
Hey, yeah. Hey, I am going to tell you something. Not in this situation, I'm going to tell you that. But you talk about one of the best kayfabers in the business would have had to have been wrestling number two. I've seen him get in the shower and take a shower with his mask on.
Yeah.
Seen him leave the building with his mask on. Well, one night we pulled up in the store behind him, and before he could get out, he wore his mask in the dadgum store, and the police was there fixing to arrest him. You know, that's how serious he was about the gimmick. I mean, them guys that wore them masks, I mean, they, you know, it's like they said, didn't nobody know who that was, but they covered it up. I mean, yeah, wrestling number two, and he had to be one of the, you know, most kayfabe-ness people I ever seen, yeah. You know.
And this is a funny thing, Gene. I was in Mexico, and Mil Mascaris and Dos Caras was both there. So I go in the shower and hear both them guys, you know, they've been working for up 10 years before I ever thought about getting into business. And both of them are in the shower with their hoods on. And I'm thinking, nobody else in the shower. I just walk in there, you know, and
yeah.
I start taking a shower and I said hello to them and they said hello back, but they both still got freaking their hoods on. I thought, what? I just, you know, looked at them. I thought, I guess this is normal over here. It's not normal at home for you to, you know, standing here with your hoods on. But so we get back out and I'm drying off with Dos Caras comes out. He takes his hood off and starts drying his head off shit and everything. But he wound up really being cool, which Mill was all right to me too, but I've never seen him with his hood off and everything. But I thought, gosh, y'all guys, y'all take it to a different level and everything. But like Tommy said, there was a lot of them guys, and it's cool and it's good that it protect themselves and their, you know, their look and their image and everything. But I was going to tell you, Gene, I guess me and Tommy needed to go when we got done wrestling. What we should have done was put masks on when we left the building.
There you go. That would have worked too. Exactly. So let's get into this list here. Number 25, we're going to work from back to front here. Number 25 on the list, The Miser, which was a masked Angelo Poffo. Do you guys remember The Miser gimmick?
I've always heard people talk about that, Gene, but I don't actually remember it myself, but I've heard many stories of him being the miser, about him trying to cut money and about him. This was a strange one to me, just I heard this like last year or something, but them going into the stores and he'd tell one of them to get the meat and one to get the bread and one to get something to drink or something. And Lanny'd go in, Randy'd go in, he'd go in. Each one of them had to get certain things. And I said, what do you mean get it? Like buy it? And they said, no, steal it. And I thought, you ever heard that, Tommy? I thought, this is strange, bunch.
I've heard that's tied on that bill, folks. Yeah, I mean, you know, and when that's probably when they was up in Kentucky and started that promotion.
Yeah.
But I always heard that that the father, he was, I mean, he still had the first penny he ever, you know, made. You know, I mean, yeah, they were tight with that money.
So number 24, now this isn't a long-term masked character here, but Stagger Lee, which of course was the Junkyard Dog in Mid-South Wrestling. And this is one of those where the baby face loses, a loser leave town, and then he comes back under a mask and all the fans are in on it, but now the heels have got to try to get the mask on him and they love Junkyard Dog. We've talked about that a lot here. So this really worked well.
You know, Gene, and I'm sure you know this because you watched Tennessee Wrestling and everything. There was also a Stagger Lee in Memphis, right?
Yes, there was.
You know who that Stagger Lee was, Tommy?
No, sir, I don't. Who was it?
Coco Beware.
Coco, beware. What's happening, Coco? How's the parent, brother? Coco, man. I used to love, man. Me and Eddie used to wrestle. him and Norvell Austin back in the day when they did the PYT, right?
PYT Express.
Yeah.
Pretty young thing. Young
He wasn't even pretty when he was young.
Oh, bless his heart. That was not accurate for poor Norvell, but he was a heck of a wrestler.
Norvell's still pretty.
Speaking of Coco and asking about the parrot, I recently come across a video of when Coco came out on Memphis Wrestling in the later years and was almost crying because Reggie
ate his bird, didn't he?
Yeah, he deep fried it at a Popeyes.
What Reggie said, it tastes just like chicken.
Exactly. And he, grown man out here crying about a bird. We ever get Reggie on here, he's going to have to tell his side of that story because that's fun for sure. Number 23 on the list is the Tennessee Stud, which, of course, that's Ron Fuller.
Was Ron under mask?
Yeah, so in Continental, well, he did it in Southeastern and Continental. You know, he would lose or get suspended, and then the Tennessee Stud would wrestle under a mask. But most people have said in later years that the real reason Ron would wrestle under the mask, because he would come, it was really weird, he would come out on TV and Gordon Sully would be like, we have Ron Fuller here speaking on behalf of the Tennessee Stud. He'd have his big cowboy hat on, and he'd cut a promo, but then we'd wrestle in the match. He would have the mask, but he would swear that he was just speaking on behalf of the Tennessee Stud. But what it was, by then, Ron was wearing the toupee, and he couldn't keep it on in the ring, so he'd wear the mask, and then he could wear the toupee around, and that was the whole reason for the masked Tennessee Stud, allegedly. I don't know. You guys may know better, but that's what they say.
Tommy?
Oh, Ron loved his hair. Now I don't know if that's a true story.
Well, you look at any recent pictures of him, and if that ain't a toupee, I'll kiss your foot, as they say. We'll move past that. Number 22. Go ahead.
Lose your hair match, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So here's a guy I'm sure you guys are familiar with. Well, it's not a certain guy because we can kind of lump a few people in here, but I know you guys know a couple of guys involved. But number 22, Lord Humongous, namely Jeff Van Camp as well as Big Sid.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Jeff Van Camp as far as from Mid-South days. Man, he was a freaking good Lord Humongous as far as, just solid in his body and everything. I mean, you know, he played, I think, pro football before he come to wrestling, didn't Gene?
Yeah, Jeff. He was a heck of an athlete.
I mean, he was big and solid and good, and he just – those road trips for Watts just got the best of him. We come in one night, and I thought everything was good, and then freaking next morning he was gone. I mean, he stayed there, I guess, 6 months, something like that, 4 months, 6 months, something like that, and then all of a sudden – one day I remember getting up and he was just gone. He had all the road he wanted. He went
back.
They
say that Mid-South was something else, right? I mean, beyond, even worse than every other territory.
Yeah, it was more miles than everywhere else. And I mean, once you got in the groove, it was what it was. And I mean, you know, you work twice on Saturday, twice on a lot of Sundays, you know, afternoon and night shows. And I mean, but man, it was, when I come right out of high school, right into that, you know, it's whatever you get into and get in that groove, and man, it was good. I mean, we was freaking making money and I mean, it was drawing well and like I said, making money. And like I said, I was fresh out of high school. I thought, which just off the start too, after I'd been in business about 6 months, you go working in the Superdome and some of those houses that they had then, you know, was great houses, knock on wood. I guess I come along at a little better time than when Tommy did when he was messing with them, because they actually, you know, which I'm sure Eddie was a big part of that, but we all kind of got took care of pretty well and everything. And I mean, like I said, we was drawing some houses and there's good talent there. You had the, you know, Dog and them had just left, and you had the Freebirds there, and you had all the different talent. You had Brad Armstrong, my brother. You had all the guys that was coming up, Steen Steiner, you know, all them guys that was coming up then that Eddie was kind of helping out and everything. So I mean, there's a lot of talent coming through there at those times.
I've heard Jeff say in interviews that he was somewhat newly married at the time and that his wife kind of gave him an ultimatum of like, get off the road or you're going to have to find a new wife. And I think they may have had a kid on the way or something, but he said ultimately that's what made him make the decision to go ahead. And I think he went into law enforcement after that. Is that right?
He wound up being a police officer. And I mean, he done that his whole career. So that was a good career for him. And I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, not that money don't cause you to keep doing something, but I mean, he was making a couple grand a week, Gene, and he was in a good spot. I mean, you know, the character took care of it, and you know, everybody really worked with him, and everybody tried to help him. Like I said, he was a really good guy. I've talked to him 3 or 4 times in the last couple of years, and he's always been super nice.
Now, number 21, I don't know that we ever really found out who was under the mask here. I know Tommy has speculated that it might have been Brad Armstrong, the mysterious Mr. R.
All I know about that guy is he was very, very, very mysterious.
To this day.
He just showed up in Georgia, didn't he?
He'd disappear on you in a heartbeat and then jump right up before a match. You never knew where he was going to be honest. Yeah, that Brad Armstrong was too much.
Oh, that's
it. Yeah. He had the people going wild on that Georgia TV.
Oh, sure Lord. Did. Yeah. Brad was my stunt man. Yeah. Nobody in there moving quick. Of course, I could move quick back then. But yeah, no, that was a heck. I loved that. Of course, it was great working against Ted DiBiase, too. I mean, we had some good matches. But yeah, that was just that was the Ole Anderson thing, and I mean it was then, you know, whether you hated it or loved it, he was good at business, you know.
Yeah, and I think you know that type of gimmick was done a lot over the years, but I think that was probably one of the most well executed versions of it. I'm not just saying that because you're on the show, but I've said that for years that I thought it was really well done. And then having Brad to kind of, you know, play off of there, that was one of the first times I got done. Now, later on, they would do that with other people. But I think that was one of the first times they had really done that, where you had somebody else to put that shadow of doubt where, you know, you come out and, you know, that's not me. But, and of course, he was working with DiBiase at the time, so you can't go wrong there, right?
But I'm going to tell you what, you know, because like, Tojo and JJ, they're the ones that trained me. Of course, Tojo was the mean guy. Jerry, he would sell. And, you know, like, and when they taught me, you sell with your face. You know, you sell with your face. And you put a mask on that. I don't know if you've ever really paid attention, but guys like Superstar, you know, Wrestling Number Two was, you know, whether you love him or hated him, Wrestling Two was one of the best at that. Because I asked him one time, I said, you know, because it was hard. Like when I was doing that mysterious Mr. R, it was hard because I'd be trying to sell my face and I'd just be smothering to death of that man. And two would say, you got to sell with your body, you know. And I sold with my body, but my thing was your face. And you put a mask on it, man, that makes your job, I mean, twice as hard, I think. I mean, yeah, hats off to all the masked men.
Yeah, it's a very different way of, you have to kind of learn a whole nother way of selling and use body language. It's a different art for sure. Number 20, the Blue Blazer, Owen Hart. Did you guys ever have any dealings with Owen or really of the Hart family much?
Man, I was around Owen a couple of times. I think Tommy was probably around Brett more than any of the rest of them. But yeah, I was around Owen a couple of times. He's always a nice, you know, cool dude and everything.
And he come to Georgia for a little bit too. Yeah, but like Dougie said, I mean, they just, you know, I mean, of course, their dad was a tough fella, I reckon, too. But, yeah, they loved it, respected it too, though. Yeah, that was very nice guys.
Now, number 19 is another familiar one for us here. Number 19 on the list, the Dark Patriot.
Who?
He was a mysterious guy too.
Mysterious as well. The Dark Patriot, Tommy. Did you ever have any matches with the Dark Patriot, Tommy? Did you ever wrestle him or tag with him or anything? Or did y'all ever cross paths?
I ain't never had him look me in my eyes. Look me in my eyes, Doug Gilbert. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. He was a dark fella. Hey, but he's a man of many faces too now. I mean, you know, hey, I don't know if y'all ever seen Freddy Cougar.
But anyway,
when I went to Japan, and I didn't even watch matches, but I'd always go out and watch him be Freddy Cougar, man. Hey, son, them folks, you know, the Japanese people, they scared anyway, but he'd come through the aisles and stuff, they'd drag it. He scared me a little bit, too. yeah, but I mean, just to do that character, man, I mean, it, you know, that's a hell of a job. And Darn Page, I mean, he's been a few things. I mean, master of all of it.
Yeah, but I guess Dark Patriot, probably Gene starting in Global and then kind of, I was trying to think, what in Continental, it was Nightmare Freddy, wasn't it?
Nightmare Freddy, but you weren't Freddy Krueger, you had like the similar outfit as Dark Patriot, just it was blue and red.
Right, but I guess like I said, starting in Global and Continental, just a little bit change the Continental, but then actual ECW and then back to Japan with it. And I've done that quite a bit, you know, in different places.
And you would pull it out in Memphis a couple of times whenever, you know, you lose the loser leave town, all of a sudden Dark Patriot might show up for a couple of weeks anyway.
Me and Tommy were somewhere one of the most spot shows one night, was one of the deals after I'd done one of the Blues League town deals, and we was a little spot show about 110 degrees, it felt like. Me and Tommy had been out working, Tommy's working at somebody, I was working at somebody else, but when we got done we had to go on like last and do something last, and by the time I was getting to the dressing room I couldn't breathe, Gene. I told Tommy, like I said, it was hot as could be, and he was looking at me and I was trying to get that mask on, and it then got a knot on the backside, and I was trying to get it undone, and I just wound up pulling it up over my mouth where I could breathe. Tommy laughed at me that night. I said, he said, "You all right?" I said, "Hell, I think so." I said, "We can get this hood off," but it was, like I said, it was stuck. I didn't never have that problem. I could get any kind of hood off pretty quick, but that night is one of the Mississippi towns, I thought I was going to choke to death.
I was watching some of those tapes a while back, and to this day, I don't know how in the world Tommy's talking about you doing Freddy with all the crap you had to wear with Freddy, the sweater and that rubber mask and all that stuff. I would smother that thing to death before I ever got to the ring.
It would just suck to your face, Gene. Like when you try to breathe in or something, it just suck right around your face. I told Tommy, I said, "Oh my gosh."
Oh, and I can't imagine that mask. And no longer than I was mysterious Mr. R, that was the worst thing. Like he's talking about in a hot building. Like, you know, it was one of them air conditioned buildings. It wasn't no big deal. But you get one of them hot buildings, and, you know, I mean, you get to go and, you know, you get to suck a little wind. It's hard enough without a mask sometimes. And with that mask on at 100 degrees, hey, you feel like you're smothering to death.
So I'm guessing at some point over the years, there's promoters that probably wanted to bring back Mysterious Mr. R, and you're like, "No, we're good."
I don't need to. Serious enough that one time.
You know what?
I made the top 25 list. I'm happy.
There you go.
Hey, Gene, I can't believe Tommy ain't got just one hood that's got Mr. R or something on it where we could take some pictures with him.
Yeah, I think he could be selling those on the old table at the conventions and the stuff. There's people that would get him a Mr. R mask. So
they mysteriously disappear.
We need to look into that. Get some of those ones from Mexico that are $1 a dozen or whatever. Hook you up with some of them. Number 18, the Avenger, Reggie Parks, who was a masked wrestler in the Mid-Atlantic, who most people are going to be familiar with that name more for belts than...
I was fixing to say, that's...
You know where I'm familiar with that name from?
Where?
When Eddie started in Kansas City, Reggie Parks worked there.
Okay.
But now I know Reggie Parks was a belt guy for the good belts and everything. Then David Milken, after Reggie pretty much, I think David Ball stepped in, Gene.
He did.
But Reggie was a super nice fellow then. And Reggie, what'd you say, the blue, what was he?
He was the Avenger.
the Avenger. I was thinking at some point he was the Blue something. Maybe it was
he probably was. I'm sure. But a lot of these guys on this list had numerous gimmicks. They just this is the one they picked.
But man, Reggie looked really good. He was always in shape. I mean, body, you know, wise and everything. And I think he's another guy that could go.
Most definitely. Number 17, The Nightmares, Danny Davis and Ken Wayne. I know that's a couple of guys you guys are familiar with.
Well, what about Tommy was talking about, wasn't you and Tommy talking about him and Johnny working with Danny and Ken, I think?
And yeah. Down in Pensacola, we draw some real good money with them, yeah. At that time, they was one of the hottest mask teams in the business.
Well,
I mean, they had their timing, their spots, just everything was right on time with them. I mean, they're just so easy to work with, you know, and they was a great tag team.
And I mean, Gene, they knew each one knew what the other was going to do and everything. As far as Tommy's talking about timing and everything was just so smooth. And I mean, Danny's a great worker. I mean, Ken was great worker and everything, but I mean, they both, one knew what the other one was going to do and everything. And I mean, it was easy to have. That's why I love a lot of the continental stuff that I was involved in because, you know, had them guys, like I said, Danny, I worked with Danny, Jerry says, but Danny and Ken, they was, like Tommy said, I mean, they was great as far as work program with. And then Tommy told me that him and Johnny drew a lot of money with them.
Hey, Jerry Stubbs, Mr. Olympia.
Where's
he's coming up. He's coming up. We'll get to him here. Yeah, he's on. Oh yeah, you know he's going to be on the list. Number 16 is the Infernos: Frankie Kane, Curtis Smith, and there's been a few others, but they're most notably Frankie Kane and Curtis Smith. Of course, they were the fireball throwing Southern tag team, and they were also Mephisto and Dante at different times as well, or at least Frankie was.
And I was trying to think, what year would they have been? What year would that have been, that Gene?
That would have been the. What do you think? Huh?
Probably before Dougie was born.
I was going to say, it probably would have been the 60s, honestly, the heyday of the Infernos, because he was doing the Great Mephisto by the 70s without the mask, doing a sheet kind of gimmick.
Tommy, who am I thinking of as Frankie Kane? This got to be a different somebody than right.
Now, there's Cowboy Frankie Kane.
Yeah.
He worked in Tennessee tough, some, but Frankie Kane was like a ex-boxer.
Yes.
Short guy. He wrestled with Great Mephisto, but Frank Kane, man, I seen him and Rastatoon get tied up one night. Anyway, that's a story for another day, but anyway.
We will come back to that story because that's an interesting story, but yeah, we'll get way down a rabbit hole if we do it today.
He was a man. I mean, he knew how to box, but he's a street fighter too.
What was he like from around here, Tommy?
I don't know where he was.
He was from Chicago, I think, or somewhere up north, because he got in.
Up north sounds, I mean, but yeah, I don't think he was from around here. I think up north sounds
better.
I can't think of the guy's name, but he's the same guy that trained Don Fargo and a lot of those guys up from around Chicago is the same one that broke Frankie Kane in. And, they were all kind of shooters, so to speak, up there as far as the wrestling aspect of it. And then they came down south and learned how to work, you know, a little more than what they did up there. But number 15, now this is the one you're waiting on here, the Interns, Jim Starr and Billy Garrett. Of course, there's been various other interns over the years, but that's the original ones.
Well, they wasn't none like them, too. I'll tell you what, those. Just watch them, and you talk about like the nightmares and timing. Him and that Jim Starr, I mean, they do this get more heat with me, and they didn't do nothing. Guy, he'd get the headlock on the guy, they'd do a double knockout, and Tom Andrews would go through the ropes, and the other one would jump down to check on him. Jim Starr would get back up on the ring and go in the ring, you know. Hey, they ain't done nothing but just switch. And that made, you know, well, everybody in the building it made mad. because everybody knew it but the referee. But that's another thing, too. I mean, back in them days, everything you did was – like in today's world, they don't care if the good Lord and everybody else, the referee and everybody else sees it. They just going to do it. That they don't understand. That gets more heat. Like, they would do that, and that pissed me off worse than anything in the world. You know, just simple. Double knockout, switch, get up, and go back in there, beat up on the guy. Yeah, I'd get mad.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. Like, you know, I liked ECW and different things like that. But once all the rules went out the window, if you can't cheat, where do you really get the heat? Because if you're not breaking the rules and you're not doing anything behind the ref's back, where's the heat other than if you're just beating the crap out of the baby face, you know? And that's a whole other topic as well, I guess. Next on the list, the Bullet, Bob Armstrong.
I was going to say a while ago now, you were talking about Ron. I was going to say him and Bob both, they had some unique characters that when they did lose a match like I did, they could come back under. And, I mean, that freaking Bob was over as the Bullet, which he's over as himself, most definitely. But he was over as the Bullet, too, and did the dancing and stuff. Man, it was just
– yeah.
If you didn't see it, it's hard to believe how over he was.
Oh, hey, do you know why he started wearing that mask?
The weight bench accident, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't know if you knew the whole story, you know.
Yeah.
I thought you fixed that just so he could dance.
Always dance.
and it wasn't because of his hair, because Bob had his hair to the end. Like, he kept that.
Yeah, loved and curls. Bullet Bob loved and curls. You ain't lying.
Sure enough. But yeah, it's funny. Referencing what Doug said a minute ago. If you try to start describing what the Bullet was and what he did out of context to somebody who hadn't seen it, didn't know how over he was, you're just like, yeah, this guy, he was like in his 50s, and he would come out and he'd grab the ropes and he'd do his knees, wobble back and forth, and he would do this. And the people were like, I don't know, man, that don't sound very cool. But folks loved it. I was one of them out there going crazy. That bad to the bone would hit, and here he'd come strutting down the aisle, and man, the whole place in Birmingham, Columbus, all those continental towns would just lose their mind.
Well, it's fired up. He got over that. He got fired up bad to the bone now. But I seen him get his heart broke one night in Cummins, Georgia.
What happened? Yeah, what happened?
Anyway, you remember that show Hee Haw?
Yeah.
A couple years ago, you remember Junior Samples?
Yeah.
BR549, come get your used car. Come on down, neighbor. Anyway, we wrestled in Cummins, Georgia one night. And Junior Samples came to the show because he was from Cummins. That's where he was from. And anyway, he come in, shook everybody's hand. Bob waved to the left. And Bob said, hey, how you doing, Mr. Samples? I'm Bob, Bullet Bob Armstrong. And Mr. Samples said, yes, I know who you are. He said, Bob, he said, you ain't no spring chicken no more, are you?
Oh, no. Oh, man.
And Bob let go of his hand and like his hero. It was funny, yeah.
Oh, man. There,
but it was, yeah. I ain't never seen Bob just have that look on his face like that.
Oh, poor Bob. Next on the list, and this is the Memphis version here, Fire and Flame, which they have it listed as Don Bass and Roger Smith. Now, of course, Jody Hamilton's involved in that a lot as well, but he's elsewhere on the list in another team.
That's those two plus Larry Wright, I think. There was actually a third.
Torch.
Yeah, there was a Torch in there with him. That was Larry Wright, I think was his name. But all them, those guys was always really nice to me and everything. I liked Roger a lot, which Roger was the bigger of the guys that could move. I mean, he could really move well and everything. But Tommy, you knew him, right?
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, he was a real good worker. He did the
Dirty Roads.
Dirty Roads. Did the Dusty Roads. I mean, and he was good. I mean, all the characters he did, he was good. And like Doug said, just kind of like a Phil Hickerson. He was a big boy, but he could move, you know. He could move really good. I mean, he was – yeah, anything you called, he was there. Or anything he called for you, he was there.
Now, here's another set of guys I know you guys are familiar with. The Super Destroyers, of course, that's Bill and Scott Irwin.
Yeah, I was around Bill a whole lot more, which I think Tommy was around Scott a whole lot more than I was and everything. But Bill was always super nice to me and everything, but I wasn't around Scott that much.
Yeah, and Bill was the nicest out of the two. Scott could work his butt off. I mean, but Bill, I got to know him actually in Georgia. Bill and Scott both. And but Bill, yeah, he was more outgoing, or want to hook up and party or whatever. Scott was kind of, Scott.
I got you. Number nine, this was more of a mass team up in the old WWF back in the 60s and 70s. The Executioners, which was Killer Kowalski and various partners. I know at one point John Studd was one of them, but always Killer Kowalski.
I thought you should say the Conquistadors.
They didn't make the list, which is a shame. That's disappointing. Number eight is a former guest of this very program, the grappler, Lynn Denton.
Tommy, did you work against Lynn, Tony, son?
I worked against Lynn. He came to Georgia. I don't remember. And I guess I worked with Tony, too. I mean, when they did the grappler thing, I'm pretty sure they was – I either worked with them up in Knoxville – or I worked with him in Atlanta one.
You know, the first time I've worked against Lynn was a year ago. Me and you worked against him and his partner.
Was that the first time?
That's the first time I think I've worked against Lynn.
Wow.
I worked against Lynn when he came to Georgia. He was just Lynn Denton. And I worked against, him a bunch too. I mean, it's just Lynn. And then they did the grappler thing.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great gimmick. And, of course, he had the loaded boot and, different aspects of it. But
Well, I was going to ask Tommy, was that before his one leg got longer than the other?
till this day, it's still longer.
That leg is?
Yeah. Don't you remember?
That's why he has hard trouble walking, right?
They had to get that short step for him.
You know what he said? I said, that guy's been wearing that boot for 30 years or 40 years. I said that when me and Tommy was wrestling grapplers.
Yeah.
He said, no, he hadn't. I used to wear that.
All right. Now here's one that we talked about earlier. Number seven, Mr. Olympia, Jerry Stubbs.
Man, Tommy was around Jerry probably a lot more at different times than I was, but I was around him a lot for that continental run and everything. He was such a super nice gentleman as far as one of the boys have ever been, as far as teaching you and helping you and everything, man, he was always super nice to me. And I love Jerry because he liked to party too and everything. But, I mean, he partied, but he'd take care of his business and handle his business. And, man, he was always one that was super – always in shape, and he could go on any night. If he had to go 60 minutes, he'd go 60 minutes. But Jerry was just he was a great guy as far as worker, but he was also a great guy to have fun with and everything.
See, and that's why his wife made him quit business and move home to Lake Sinclair, too.
Because he liked that too much fun.
Hey, Jerry, when I first got into business, when I first went to Georgia, Jerry was like one of the guys that come down and put the guys over. And then he got the opportunity. He went to Continental and got the Mr. Olympia thing. Did good with it. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't he go to Louisiana too?
What? Yeah.
He went to Louisiana. And I just think he just got tired of that road. I mean, and that Louisiana, I guess, did that to a few of the guys. But I think he got tired of the road and went home, actually, yeah.
He wound up Tommy, he was partners with JYD down there. Yes. When Dog was sold, he was Dog's partner down there. And I mean, yeah. But Jerry was.
He started out as a policeman in Forest Park there in Georgia, which is kind of out in Forest Park right there where Delane had ran the Ramada Inn, Dougie.
Right.
That's where Forest Park was out there. And yeah, he was a policeman there, you know, for years and got into business. And yeah, but just first class guy all the way, man. Just very respectful and, you know, I mean, a hell of a worker, too.
I went to his house team as a young, I mean, young, probably 11, 12 years old to his house. I won't ever forget. Right in the center of his house, they had a hot tub, like in, I say center, but somewhere the midpoint of it, which, Tommy, I don't know if you ever went to this house. I'm talking about in Florida, but, man, it was such a cool setup. Like, he had just a room in the middle of his house. Like, you walk into his, like, screened-in type stuff, but then you walk in, there's a hot tub right there in the middle of it, but it was like a, like I said, Jerry liked to have a good time, too, but it was like a, which, you know, he had his family there and everything, but it was a party crib, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can track him down and get him on the show sometime. He's I interviewed him on a podcast years and years ago, and just super nice guy and a ton of great stories. So who knows? We may track him down and get him on here one of these days. Number six, the spoiler, Don Jardine.
Tommy, was you ever around him?
He can walk the top rope good.
Yeah.
That's about all I know about Mr. Don.
So you didn't ever work with him or anything?
Yeah, I just heard he was mean and very personable. So I don't know nothing. I mean, like I said, I wasn't ever around him, really. I think he come to Georgia one time. I was never around him. I just heard he was.
Where was he? I know, I guess he was super over everywhere, Tommy, but where did he draw money at? Wherever he went?
Florida, I guess. Was he in Florida?
Florida and Texas were two of the places he drew a lot of money.
Yeah, but I remember Florida is where he come from.
Yeah.
Of course, all them boys that come from Florida was mean, bad boys.
Yeah, for sure. Next up, number five. Now, this isn't two. This is Mr. Wrestling, number one, Tim Woods.
I knew
before your time.
I knew Tim. Yeah, Tim. I bought a car from him. I bought Terry Lynn, a little MG. I bought from Tim. Of course, he was working in the Carolinas, but he had a audio store right there in Hapeville, Georgia, where you remember Miss T-Bell, Dougie, that had the little apartments.
I remember that name, yeah.
Falcon's Rest. That's what.
Yeah, I was going to say the chicken Chick-fil-A place, what I was going to call it.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A Crystal was right in front of it, but that's where all the boys stayed, Miss T-Bell. But in Hapeville, and Tim Woods, he owned an audio store there. And me and Tito Santana was living together. We went down and bought 2 cents, big old speakers. We'd have that whole apartment thing rocking. And then, of course, he opened up Stewart Avenue, was our road in Atlanta. And he opened a bar called LP Pimps. And, man, it was a nice place, too. And especially Stewart Avenue. But I don't know how long he was in business. But
not a long time.
Not what a long time. Tim was always a really nice fella. I mean, he opened the door. He gave us a heck of a deal on the speakers. And, you know, he always took care of the guys. And on top of that, was a heck of a wrestler, too.
Yeah.
He was always busy. I mean, not just with wrestling. I mean, most of my time is spent with wrestling where he, you know, he was doing different things, kind of like Dougie does, you know.
A little of this, a little of that, huh?
Yeah.
I got you. Number four, the Assassins, Jody Hamilton and Tom Renesto. Of course, there were various Assassins over the years, but they're most prominently known to be the original Assassins, if you will. And I'm sure you had a lot of dealings with Jody Hamilton and Georgia Tommy, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I worked for Jody when he opened his wrestling company, Deep South Wrestling. I worked for him then. Jody was always very nice to me. You know, of course, me and Nick, his son, was, you know, pretty close friends. But, yeah, Jody was – and did the assassin. That's another big man. Jody was really pretty big.
Yeah. But
he could move. I mean, you know, I thank God, you know. But he'd be – I mean, Jody would go, man.
Yeah, and I don't know if many people – Tommy had much was around that Tom Renesto much. The only time that I remember him was like coming through here, him not working, but him as a booker one time that Jerry Jarrett brought in. That was I hate to say it was a failure, but what his thinking was California and this was Tennessee, so it didn't kind of, you know, his thinking kind of didn't go this direction.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing a show review in 1985 over on WrestleCopia, and, you know, we had everything going. You know, Eddie did the This Is Your Life, you know, TV, you know, bit with Lawler. Then he got Eddie's Army going, and they was really cooking that feud with him and Lawler. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, Jerry Jarrett brings Tom Renesto in, and he just shuts all that down. Like, brings in Jeff Williams, I think is his name, Jeff,
Tux
Newman was what they called it. They called him Tux Newman on TV.
Right.
And not Williams, Jeff something. It'll come to me later. But anyway, they brought him in as Tux Newman because Jimmy Hart had just left. Right. And yeah, he's done. We're currently watching that now, and he does some just really odd stuff that just isn't Memphis at all. Like, yeah, I said, it's more California booking.
Yeah, well, Tom Renesto was an odd guy anyway.
Was you around him sometime?
He used to put – and I can't believe Jared did that. I mean, when I was just broke into business, Tom Renesto did the book for Nick for about 2 weeks and was gone. That's about as much as I knew him. But, yeah.
Well, he didn't last here but a couple of months, I think. And everything.
No, it didn't last real long. Things kind of took a nosedive pretty quick. And I know Eddie got on out of there and went to work for Watts. And I'm sure that's a lot of the reason why.
Yeah, it was. And I think it was just, you know, time for him to go on. But I mean, it was just like I said, you go from, you know, when you've got a good TV or a great TV to just not a even entertaining TV, you know, you got to give yourself a chance to draw money. And that's just one of the few times. There's been two or three times I saw it with different guys here like that, but that was the main one, I think.
So now we're up to the top three. And number three, I think, personally, is one of the best mass wrestlers of all time. And we've talked about this on the show. He's kind of had three separate Hall of Fame careers to some degree. But the mass superstar, Bill Eadie.
Oh, shit. Bill Eadie, I love you, man. God, when I wrestled him in Atlanta, man, just one of the nicest, easiest going guys you ever worked with in your life, and knows the business. Just a gentleman, kind of like a Nick Bockwinkel, you know, just a doggone gentleman from get to go. It was a pleasure, and he taught me so much too, man. Bill, just a really, really great guy, man. And shoot, I mean, you figure he did demolition. I mean, everything he did was pretty successful.
And here's the thing, I was around him and kind of saw the way he was, everything. Gene was, like Tommy said, I mean, he was a true gentleman. I booked him over in Japan a couple of times with Dick Murdoch. And all Japan during those days, him and Murdoch was a tag team. And I booked them during two tag tournaments for IWA. And, man, you talking about freaking over, which, I mean, I've heard people talk about him being over there. But man, when they got there and I really got to see it, and I mean, the funniest thing, I mean, and who would picture this like him and Murdoch being a tag team that people remember, but in Japan yeah. – that just that duo, something about it was, and they'd go out there and have matches every night of that tour. And man, it could be against the young guys or the most over tag team that you had over there. And man, the freaking people would eat it up. And I mean, they loved everything that Bill had done. I mean, was over. Everything Murdoch done was over also. But, I mean, Bill was just a, like Tommy said, and I'd laugh because he would get, like, the, you know, the American newspapers, and he'd be looking at, like, the, you know, the stocks, and he was just a business-type guy. And, I mean, he was super, you know, he was just a super nice, good dude.
It's pretty wild. Like, you know, he had that early stage of his career where he was one of the Mongols and had a whole unique style. Then he becomes the mass superstar, which is something completely different than the Mongol. You would never relate the two. And then he comes out of mass superstar to be in Demolition Axe, which was a completely different wrestling style than the other two.
What about Gene? And I don't think nobody else would say this, but what about, which I mean, because it was in Japan, but what about him being the super machine and Andre being the giant machine? And
yeah, I'm kind of surprised I didn't make the list here because, you know, you had Mulligan was the big machine.
Mulligan was
a super machine and then giant machine.
Yeah. And what was Mulligan? What machine?
Mulligan was the big machine.
And here's the thing, and people probably don't know this, and I'm just trying to remember what the names was, but there was a faction that was called the machines over there, and they left the company to go to work for another company. So they wanted guys that they knew wouldn't nobody want to mess with. So they put Bill Levy as a super machine, which he was mass superstar over there, but they thought super machine.
Yeah.
So him, and they thought, well, who else would somebody not want to mess with? So they said Mulligan, and they said Andre. And when they put them, because they thought at first the guys might come back and try to do something to whoever they put under these masks. And they said, won't nobody be stupid enough to come back and mess with Bill Levy, Andre, and Mulligan. And they said, if they want to, we want them to come back because they ain't going to like what happens to them. And believe me, that bunch never come back.
I can imagine. It's awful stupid to come back against that.
For sure. All right, that brings us up to number two, Mr. Wrestling 2, Johnny Walker.
Now, how did he get that Wrestling 2 number 2?
I know, that's kind of questionable, might, right?
I should have been number 2.
Yeah, for peek behind the curtain, folks. Tom, before we started recording, Tommy tried to convince me to swap him and Mr. Wrestling 2 out from 21 to
2. I did try to get it to y'all.
Hey, Tommy, you can't get him to go along with the plan, can you?
No, not me.
Oh, yeah. No.
Hey, Wrestling 2, I mean, you talk about kayfabe and a mask and all that. I mean, Wrestling 2, it was a heck of a worker. I mean, he did the... And putting the mask on, I don't know if it's because he wasn't quite as pretty as me, but Wrestling number 2, he put that mask. I mean, he was Rubber Man Johnny Walker. You know, do you remember him as Rubber Man Johnny Walker?
I mean, I've seen magazine like pictures, I mean, and articles and stuff as well before my time.
Different kind of ways and everything, and I guess did all right with that. But when he become Wrestling number 2, man, I mean, it was just a whole new thing for him, man. And he draws money everywhere. I've seen him wrestle Abdullah at the Omni, I mean, and sell it, thing slap out. I mean, Wrestling number 2, especially in Georgia, I mean, he was, you know, he was over as good as anybody ever been.
And people would pop for that knee lift as big as they've ever popped for any flip off the top of a cage or anything else. Like, that knee lift was, like, as simple as that sounds, like, knee lift was, like, hugely over. Like, it was a big deal.
People seen that, they knew it was over, and it was over. If Wrestling 2 give you a knee lift, it was pretty much over, unless it's one of them short knee lifts,
right?
They didn't give the short one, but when he give you that big knee lift, oh, and pop you on your back, I mean, that thing sounded like a firecracker going off. And yeah, the people, it's just like, wow, you know, I mean, yeah, Wrestling 2 was over.
And then number one, the Destroyer, Dick Byer.
You know what? Now, I know he was super over in Japan. I mean, he was like the most popular mask guy that I think ever has been to Japan as far as the stuff that I've seen about him over there. And, you know, I watched a lot of different documentaries on different people and everything and different guys that got books that different guys, and he's in more of those books and documentaries than about anybody else. But I mean, I know he was super over there, but I guess he drew a ton of money in the States too, right?
He did draw a lot of money in the States, but yeah, in Japan, like he was, they put him on a mainstream TV show, like a variety show, which were huge in Japan. And he became like a big household name over there. Like even people who weren't wrestling fans knew, oh, Destroya, you know, they knew who he was, the mask and the whole bit. And of course he had two runs over here. He was the Destroyer in California and a lot of different places. Then he was Dr. X in the AWA where he was a heel. Vern Gagne said, we want to bring the Destroyer in at the end of the run. We want you to unmask. He's like, I'm not taking off the mask. And there's like, well, we're going to need you to unmask. And he's like, all right, well, I'll do a whole different gimmick. And he became Dr. X. And that's a pretty, that whole story is very interesting for people who haven't heard it. But one thing fascinating, I read Dick Byers' book earlier this year and watched a lot of stuff on him. But when me and you were prepping for Eddie's book and I was going through old results, I was shocked to see that Eddie wrestled Dick Byer as the Destroyer on like a Boston Garden show for the WWF. I wouldn't expect to see that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
That is neat, which I didn't guess I was.
That's definitely two different eras. And then I realized later going through some stuff that he come in and did like a couple of TVs for Watts as just like an enhancement guy. I forget what they called him, you know, just something random, some random name. And I went and looked up like, damn, that's Dick Byer. That's crazy. I don't really know how that come about happened, but it was around the time that Eddie was there doing like the tag team with Randy Colley and uh-huh. that era of Mid-South. So.
Well, that's cool because they were still, at that point, they were still drawing good and everything. That's when Eddie first went there, when Randy was the Under the Mask as the.
He was the Nightmare.
The Nightmare. That's what he
and
was.
And then he won the title and they changed his name to the Champion.
Right.
And then he lost the title. They had to quit calling him the Champion.
Still call him Champion.
They did for a little bit, and eventually they took the mask off of him, and I think they went back to Nightmare or something else. But I guess that was a pretty good thing on his part, because I figure he thought, well, hell, if they're calling me the Champion, they can't take the belt off of me because my name's shot. So, well, there you go, guys. The top 25 masked wrestlers of the 1940s to the 1990s, and both of you made the list, so that's pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, I think. I was hoping maybe – knew Tommy would. I was hoping I would. But and what's cool was we got to wrestle quite a few of those guys.
Yeah, a lot of those guys, honestly. And honorable mention, I was hoping they'd make the list, but they didn't. But the Ace of Spades didn't quite make the list, but he should have. For those who don't know, that was Mr. Tommy Gilbert under a mask. And also was hoping Bad Street, the masked Freebird version of Brad Armstrong, might make the list because I always thought that was pretty fun as well. Anything before we go, guys?
Man, I've enjoyed sitting here talking with y'all about these masked guys. And like I said, I'm a big mask fan. I mean, I like masked guys, and still to this day, I like good mask gimmicks and guys that can work in the gimmicks. Like Tommy said, it's not, you know, it's one thing to use your face and sell. It's another to not have your face and to try to sell and get a reaction, the reaction that you want with what you've got to work with there and everything. But it's a different ball game, ain't it, Tommy?
Yes, sir. Hey, it's been great talking about the masked men too, guys. Hey, tomorrow night, Clayton, North Carolina, it's going to be on at Clayton Fitness Center. Be there early for meet and greet. Going to be a big night of rest. I'm in a big six-man tag, so looking forward to that. And, hey, y'all keep your questions coming on in, man, because we're there to answer them. And enjoy y'all tuning in. Tell your friends about it and just keep us going.
Yeah, get those questions in. We're getting ready to do another Q&A episode where we do a whole episode of Doug and Tommy answering your questions. So, go ahead and get those in, and here in the next couple of weeks, we'll be doing one of those real soon, and you can hear your question get answered right here on the show.
And listen, guys, thanks for, like Tommy and Jimbo said, thanks for listening and everything to your friends and everything. If you got anything you need for Tommy or myself to do for you, I'll just give Gene a shout, and he will get the message on to us. But listen, thanks, everybody, for listening. Peace. We're out.
relive the glory days of Memphis wrestling with the Retro Wrestling Review USWA podcast. Each week, we go back in time to review USWA Championship Wrestling from the 1990s, episode by episode. Join us for watch-alongs, behind-the-scenes stories, and exclusive interviews with people who were there and lived it. Whether you grew up watching it or you're discovering it for the first time, this podcast is your ringside seat to Memphis wrestling history. It's all a part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Listen now at uswapodcast.com.
In the heart of Tennessee, born with pride, Doug and Tommy taking rings in stride. Memphis legends never backing down. Wrestling warriors, they wear the crown. USWA glory in their veins. Fighting legends breaking chains. In the square circle they made their name. Podcast champions, it's their claim to fame. On the mic they roar, on the map they soar. Dangerous conversations, fans wanting more. Podcast kings ruling the waves. Memphis wrestling race. In the state. From title belts to Hall of Fame, Doug and Tommy carved the name. Fists of fury and hearts of gold. Every story, every fight we told. Tales of glory, laughter, cry. Tennessee warriors with hearts open wide. Conversations, fans wanting more.